WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, former president Jimmy Carter, live in our studio. He has a new book about religiously based violence against women, which he says is the biggest problem in the world. We will talk to President Carter about that and more today. And the New Yorker cartoon editor, Bob Mankoff, in his new book, he recalls the Seinfeld New Yorker cartoon episode and much more. Bob Mankoff today, and we'll talk to a writer covering a new study that finds parental involvement doesn't help your kids in school. And before I say, come on, what are you kidding? We'll ask her to explain the study. So all of that is coming up today. But we begin this morning with a brief tour of City Bike headlines over the last 10 months. Last June, City Bike sets record of more than 30,000 rides on two consecutive days. Last October, City Bike ridership tops 42,000 trips per day in October. Last November, City Bike's first 5 months, zero deaths, 93,000 members. Last December, Jeanette Sadiq Khan, the Bloomberg administration's hard-charging transportation commissioner, has an enviable victory lap. This January, snow, ice, and wind, no issue for City Bike's diehards. But then last Thursday, City Bike, needing millions of dollars, looks for help. And that's where we are. If you were casually paying attention, all seemed rosy with City Bike after its launch, with record numbers and devoted ridership. But then, out of nowhere, it seems headlines that the blue bikes have the blues and are seriously in the red. Kate Hines, WNYC transportation reporter, is here to explain. And in a minute, we'll hear from our Metro reporter and editor, Andrea Bernstein, who will put this particular transportation story in the larger political context. Kate Hines, good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
So I know this is your world at Transportation Nation, but did you have the same sort of reaction that a lot of casual observers, including me, seem to have, which was, wait, what? I thought City Bike was doing great.
Well, the signs had pointed to some issues long before last week's news broke. We had reported last summer that Alta Bikeshare, which is New York City Bikeshare's parent company, was in the process of suing the insurance company that it had contracted to insure it against the losses it had suffered during Sandy. So we knew that they were several million dollars in the hole from Sandy damage. Also, because the launch of BikeShare was so delayed, it was set back a little bit, about over a year. It went a year without operating revenues that it had expected due to Sandy, due to software problems. So it already launched the program in a financial hole. So what surprised me was it seemed like everybody got on the same page last week, BikeShare advocates and the mayor's office, and said, look, we're really mad, we're unhappy with Alta, and we're not going to hide it anymore.
So how much is City Bike in the hole?
That's a very good question. You know, there are reports that it's as much as $15 million in the hole. You know, Alta is keeping their books close to their chest on this one, and they are looking for investors.
And is its existence actually threatened, which some of the press coverage has speculated on?
I don't think so. You know, that's a topic for a future. We'll have to see. We'll have to watch closely. I don't think the de Blasio administration would let it fail. I actually think it's too big to fail at this point. But Alta needs a cash infusion. That's pretty clear. The question is, what can it do right now if it doesn't get that cash infusion to cut its operating costs?
So we had faulty system software,
yep,
delaying the bike share's initial launch,
mm-hmm,
shades of the Affordable Care Act. Then Sandy came,
mm-hmm,
destroying millions of dollars worth of equipment. Then when the program did launch, there were initial software glitches. People had trouble with docs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then in January this year, the designer of City Bikes, Bicycles, and Docking Stations filed for bankruptcy.
Right. That's had ripple effects throughout the whole bike share world.
And so if a lot of these problems were in place before the launch or manifested themselves shortly thereafter, why did it take this long to start hearing about the revenue shortfall?
Well, I think that Alta wasn't very open. I think that New York City wanted to give Alta enough time to try to get its act together before it went public. But I think basically the feeling is that Alta is in over its head and it needs help now.
And I read those stats about record ridership, but does this mean there needed to be even more ridership in order to make up the financial shortfall?
Well, it's a bit of a conundrum because they're really losing money on the annual memberships. It's the tourist and the day passes, which really help them, you know, make back some of that operating revenue that they need. But there's, you know, there's a couple of problems there. One is that you hear reports that the software is so unfriendly at the kiosks. You see, you know, the Twitter world is just rife with images of people standing there staring dumbly at it while they're holding a credit card, completely unable to complete the transaction for a day or a week pass. The other point is that it's the way that the day and week passes work doesn't necessarily jibe with the average tourist stay in New York, which is somewhere around 3 or 4 days. And so, you know, there's talk about does City Bike need to change its pricing structure altogether?
So let's bring in some listeners on that. Folks, if you are an annual member of City Bike, are you going to renew? Or if you had too many problems with the system, it's too much of a pain, and, well, maybe not another $95 for next year. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And to pick up what Kate was just suggesting, would you pay more? Because that seems to be one of the talking points out there that perhaps they need to charge more for an annual membership, that $95 is just too little for all those unlimited rides that you might take.
Well, I wanted to throw something else out, something that's also hampering tourists purchasing the day and week-long passes, is that City Bike is not in all the areas that tourists like to go, namely the Upper West and Upper East Side. You don't have access to the big museums. You don't have access to Central Park. You do see City Bikes, you know, on rivers, on the bike path on the Hudson River, and you see them in Central Park, but those are people just making loops. You know, the idea is that you really need to go where the tourists want to go if you want their money.
And so any tourists listening right now, there are probably almost no tourists ever listening to this show at any moment. But if you happen to be a tourist, has City Bike been on your to-do list? 212-433-9692. All our lines are already full with probably annual members telling us what their plans are for the coming season. But before we get to the callers, let's bring in Andrea Bernstein, WNYC Metro reporter and editor and former editor of our Transportation Nation project. And Andrea, you covered the Bloomberg years from a transportation perspective. So here is Mayor Bloomberg from May 2012 announcing the partnership with Citibank.
Citibike won't require any city or federal tax subsidy to operate the system. I think that bears repeating. We are getting an entirely new transportation network without spending any taxpayer money. Who thought that that could be done?
Who thought, Andrea?
I was there when he said that, and boy, did he look like the cat that ate the canary. I mean, I think that that was key to their selling of Citibike to New York City. I mean, you got to remember the context. We are now in Bloomberg's third term. Some people are very angry about bicycle lanes, bike share. You may remember when Citibike was introduced, the Wall Street Journal editorial page had this video that went viral about how Citibike was either a communist or a fascist plot. There was a lot of opposition. And the feeling of the Bloomberg people ultimately was, we want to get this done. We want to get it introduced. We think that people will like it. No city in the world has done this without taxpayer subsidies.
Really?
Washington, D.C. I mean, even U.S. cities have done it with a combination of city subsidies and a grant. Some cities are just paying for it outright around the world.
So the financial model here, to be clear, is money from Citibank because they get all this sponsorship on the bikes, and then the fees that people pay to ride the bicycles.
Right, exactly. So the idea was, let's get this out there so people can sort of see what it's like and how transformative it can be. And I do think that it has built a constituency. I mean, you know, Mayor de Blasio, who had his, you know, kind of a testy relationship at some points with the Bloomberg administration over bike lane and biking issues, and, you know, who is, during the campaign, identified himself as a motorist, was for it. So was Christine Quinn. So were all the Democrats. You may remember that Anthony Weiner came here and was dangling his city bike fob. I mean, it was sort of a cachet. So in terms of creating a political constituency for it, they did that. Now, the problem is now is, what do they do? I mean, it is sponsored by a bank. The connection between banks and too big to fail, I'm sure, is not lost on any of our listeners. So the question is, do they get more money out of the sponsors? Do they get more money out of the annual membership? I mean, if you think about it, I'm an annual member. It's incredibly cheap. There are certainly days where I need to get somewhere quickly, and I think, would I take a cab or would I take a bike? Well, if you take a bike, if you do that twice a year, which I think most annual members would, you might be saving two cab fares. Now, there are people clearly for whom $95 a year is too much, but for the people for whom it's not, probably $125 a year isn't too much either. And then the question comes, should there be a city subsidy? I mean, the city subsidizes, for example, ferries to a great degree per passenger. The state government subsidizes the commuter rails, Long Island Railroad, Metro North. Subways are subsidized. There's not a public transit system anywhere else where there's no public subsidy. So that is probably a discussion that has to be had. Now, given all of that, I mean, it's pretty clear that the Bloomberg administration went to great lengths to make sure that we would not see the precariousness of the financial structure on which the city bike system was built.
Corey, in the Flatiron District.
Hi.
You're on WNYC. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Brian. Thank you. I'm a huge fan of your show.
Thank you.
I'm a commuter, so I take the train to Penn Station every day, and having the city bike station there when it's full is really convenient. And I think a lot of commuters and people who live far from subways, their whole like psychology around the commuting system has totally changed now. They can get places in 5 minutes when it used to take them 20 minutes. And people would probably pay $50 more a month, maybe $5 more, $50 more a year, $5 more a month, if it meant they could keep their habits in place. And if it meant that the strength and the longevity of the city bike system, people aren't going to go back to the times when it took them so long to get places. People want to keep this in place, and I would proudly and happily pay $50 more a year if it meant we still had the city bike system for many years to come.
They're going to ask you to testify at the city council hearing on this. Corey, thank you very much. Matt in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Brian. So I was a biker from Astoria, and then moved to Rutherford, New Jersey, so now I commute into Port Authority, mm-hmm. and I'm an annual member, and I guess I found that the hassle of finding a bike during rush hours was like more anxiety than I needed in addition to my regular anxiety. So I probably am not going to rejoin, but I guess listening to that last caller, I would probably pay more if I could be guaranteed that there would be a bike for me in the mornings and on the way back to the Port Authority.
So the biggest problem for you is by the time you get to Port Authority, there are no more bikes at the docking station there?
Yeah, that's right. I get in at like, 9:15, and it's improved a lot. I mean, I see the guys out there working really hard, and I think those are the guys that have been cut by the company already. But, there's no guarantee, and so it's just easier to walk. It takes longer, but it's at least mm-hmm. I can sort of depend on the time.
Matt, thank you very much, and good luck. I should say that Matt is the only one of the callers on our 10-line board who says he's an annual member and will not renew. People are calling up to express their love for City Bike. Having said that, it is a thoroughly unscientific sample. But, Kate, is that a problem that afflicts a lot of people, what he identified?
Yes, Matt has touched on what is probably the most visible problem with City Bike is the rebalancing, which bedevils bike share systems everywhere but has especially plagued our bike share system here in New York. The idea that there's, as I think Paul Steely White said on your show on Friday, there's no bike there when you need it, and then when you want to go dock the bike at your destination, you can't find an open dock.
One of the solutions to that is increased density. And that is something that the Bloomberg team did not want to take on. I mean,
density of biking station, docking stations.
Correct. Obviously, I mean, you know, there was a whole lot of pushback from some community boards, from some apartment co-op owners who felt like they couldn't have access to parking. So they sort of let it be known that they had had about as much of that fight as they wanted. Thank you very much. But other cities, for example, Montreal has in part solved its balancing problem by adding more and more and more bike share stations. And when you do that, you increase the probability that there's going to be one where you want it. It is no doubt a big problem. I mean, just this morning I had train trouble and I was thinking, oh, should I take a city bike to do the last 15-minute part of my commute? But I was too worried I would make it here on time, so I didn't.
And we just got this tweet from someone named Rod who says, Bloomberg chose city bike over HSBC bike because it sounded better, but HSBC offered much greater funding. Do you know anything about that, Andrea? Is that true history?
I had not heard that.
This is new, unconfirmed. We are not putting this out as fact
news
as anything, but some guy tweeted it. Okay. According to Kate Hines and Andrea Bernstein, this is not a fact that is known, at least not in the Transportation Nation universe. Evelyn in Flushing, you're on WNYC. Hi, Evelyn. Evelyn, we'll come back to you. Turn your radio off. Eric in Park Slope, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Andrea. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Eric.
So I'm an annual member. I live in Park Slope, and we actually don't have docks in my part of the neighborhood. The nearest one's about a 15-minute walk, but I would certainly renew because it's helpful to me as a last-mile piece of transit when I'm in Manhattan or other neighborhoods that do have docks. And certainly if it expands southward into more Park Slope, I would gladly renew, and I would certainly be willing to pay a little bit more than I am now.
Thank you very much. There was a chart, Kate, in the Wall Street Journal that showed how annual membership signups rose throughout the year, but day passes actually dropped. But a lot of people are pointing out that, of course, that happened because it was winter.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of this seasonally adjusted numbering do we need to take with a grain of salt?
I definitely think it's very unfortunate that we had the polar vortex essentially sitting on the northeast part of the United States for several months of this winter. There's no doubt
that. In more ways than one.
Exactly. We'd like to be broadcasting right now from our studio in Hawaii, and yet we're not. But
And another thing that when the program first launched, I remember talking with both of you two and getting the sense that organizers were really focusing on those annual memberships.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying it's not a tourist thing.
Right.
It's a commuter thing. It's for New Yorkers. So did organizers overcorrect and forget about the tourists? Because all of a sudden, now that these problems have mysteriously appeared, everybody's saying, oh, there aren't enough tourists using enough tourists using
it. I don't know that that's the case, that it was a commuter thing. It's a short hop thing, which is it's not meant for a sort of day ride up the Hudson. But what happened in cities like Washington is that there were way more tourists than they expected. And part of that is sort of when you think about a map of Washington in your head, it makes sense. There are such long distances between some of these monuments, perfect for a bike ride, but it can be very hard to find a cab, and the metro might not go there. But what Kate said is really crucial. You can't take a city bike to the Met Museum or the Museum of Natural History. So the sort of the tourist triangle is not necessarily served. And also, I mean, I've tried buying a day pass. I think it's something like 21 steps. They need to figure that out, because tourists who come to New York City are already overwhelmed. They want to be able to, like, buy a card, swipe it, and be done.
Yeah, it's not actually that convenient. I'm not a city bike annual member, largely because I have my own bike that I use for most of my commuting. And on the rare occasions when I have used a city bike on a day pass, it's really been annoying just to get the bike out.
And you're a New Yorker.
Now, maybe it'll be, you know, maybe you just get used to it. You know, maybe if I do it a fifth and sixth time and just kind of get used to it, then it's, oh, okay, this is how you do it. But I had software glitches. It was not clear to me that I had successfully docked the bike when I was done one time in a way that would be registered as I actually returned the bike and didn't steal the bike. And somebody else had to explain to me that, oh, no, even though it says you didn't really return it yet, see, you could see by this little thing over there that it knows you did.
Yeah, a lot of us had return anxiety in the beginning of the system. You weren't alone in that. And I think City Bike bears some of the blame here because there's a real lack of marketing savvy, or at least when the system first began. A lot of the things that you learned about ways to use the City Bike system to your best advantage came from other users on Twitter, which is fine. But it would have been nice if, you know, official word came down, or if there was a, you know, something posted near the stations that said when you want to undock a bike, you lift the seat and then tug. You know, a lot of it was done by trial and error, which discouraged a lot of people.
I can certainly see a scenario where some city council members find some capital money that they control to bring docking stations to some of these neighborhoods like Park Slope, Upper West Side, Upper East Side, and where annual members are asked to pony up some more. Perhaps they would keep the $95 rate as an introductory rate, but after that it would bump up to some amount, and where more money is brought from sponsors. I mean, let's not forget, this is incredibly popular, and I don't really know what $46 million worth of advertising buys, but City Bike seems to be getting a pretty good deal here.
We are talking about City Bike's financial problems with Kate Hines from our Transportation Nation desk and Andrea Bernstein, our Metro reporter, and Sarah in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC talking about who to blame, right, Sarah?
I'd love to talk about who to blame. I think it's really unfair that, you know, Bloomberg's taking blame, you know, and I think I'm an annual member and, you know, I was actually one of the founding members. I'm proud of it. But, you know, really out of the gate, I understand there's going to be all of these problems. And actually, the New York City Bike Shares and their customer service team has been wonderful. If something's wrong and you call, they're so helpful, which is nice to someone who's paying money and, you know, feeling good that at least someone's trying to handle this. But, like, why isn't Alta being held accountable for improving their operations? It's like having an absentee landlord. You know, it's just like, we can pay more money, similar to what the second caller said. Happy to pay more money if the system is improving, but if it's not getting fixed, like it's on Alta. Like, and I think that they need to be really held accountable for this. And I'm really sick of hearing other people taking the blame.
Who agrees? Who disagrees? And are they putting Alta's feet to the fire in any way?
I think the city is putting Alta's feet to the fire. What you're starting to see is the trickling out of the monthly operational reports that New York City Bike Share and Alta must supply to the New York City Department of Transportation. Reporters have filed Freedom of Information Law requests and gotten that. In May, you know, give or take a few weeks, you'll see the first report, the first year's worth of reporting come out of Alta. And New York City, I'm sure, will make a lot of hay out of that.
I think it's
document.
Also important to remember, I mean, this is a shaky financial foundation. Alta mm-hmm. was having financial problems. And, you know, right before they launched with New York City, they swapped out their software for this very unreliable, untested software. So, you know, I think that there was sort of Alta was having problems, but New York City really kind of didn't want to hear of it. And their attitude was, make it work.
Sarah, thank you for your call. Please call us again. But does this give us a chance to think about the Bloomberg approach to public projects using private money? I saw a Wall Street Journal development reporter tweet, other Bloomberg self-sustaining pub-private initiatives have struggled too. Brooklyn Bridge Park, Hudson River Park, et cetera. That was the tweet from a Wall Street Journal reporter. Do you go there, or are City Bike's troubles City Bike's troubles, and it's comparing apples to oranges?
Well, one of the things that I wanted to mention earlier is that when New York City's Department of City Planning did its own study on bike share and how bike share might be launched in New York City back in, I think it was 2009, it recommended that the city launch bike share with city money first for the initial phase one bikes and then go to corporate sponsors for the second phase of launching.
I mean, I also want to say about Bloomberg that, you know, Bloomberg was a real innovator and he tried things. And, you know, I sort of give him credit for that, for being willing to say, what are the best ideas? Let's try them. No one had ever tried this. In many ways, it's been a huge success. It's certainly been a huge public transportation success. So now the challenge for the de Blasio administration is to make it a financial success as well.
Is there any chance that the program could expand itself to prosperity? Or is the thinking that it's going to focus on the existing system first, and it's got to, before even thinking about expansion to other neighborhoods?
I don't think we know that. I mean, I think that it's, we're sort of all kind of groping in the dark here. But my guess is if they're going to ask more of customers and ask more of sponsors, that there's going to have to be some additional offering of service to, the spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down.
Here is the odd biker who is dubious of the system. Dennis in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, Brian. I'm a biker, and I've been an urban biker for probably about 30 years or so. And, I'm not part of City Bike Share. I feel like I should embrace it as a person who travels on a bike and wants to support alternative transportation. But I just find that most or many city bikers are terrible bikers. They don't follow any of the rules of the road. And it just concerns me, if we're going to throw tourists out there as well, how that, New York City is not Cape Cod. And I feel like that's the way a lot of city bikers approach biking in New York.
Sunday drivers, 7 days a week, says experienced cyclist Dennis in Brooklyn. I've heard a couple of cyclists bring this up around the time City Bike was being launched, that, oh, God, it's chaos now. We're already getting blowback from everybody because we're so many bicyclists these days. Now there's going to be all these inexperienced people on the road. And I don't know if it's really happening.
I don't think that Dennis's view is backed up by the, admittedly scant studies that are out there. But there have been a couple that show that city bikers actually follow the rules of the road more closely than your regular biker does.
Are there still no deaths?
I don't think there have been any deaths.
No.
There have been some injuries, but there are not that many cyclist deaths in a year, but I don't think there have been any city bikers that I've heard of.
And reports of traffic problems, like on roads where there aren't bike lanes in Midtown, since this is largely a Midtown thing.
Well, remember, it's mostly New Yorkers that are using it. So that's probably one of the reasons. But, it's sort of like when we've gone out and talked to people, they say traffic in New York City moves slowly anyway, without city bikes.
Well, and we should remember, too, that Jeanette Sadakan, the former transportation commissioner, actually touted slower traffic. She called it traffic calming.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's a euphemism.
It's a safety measure.
For slower traffic as one of the advantages of city bike.
Yeah, in New York City, there's always this attitude. It's sort of like when you get on the train and then you stand firm by the door. You don't want the new riders on. I hear a little bit of this, the sort of, it's fine for me, but the next person coming on, no thank you.
WNYC's Kate Hines and Andrea Bernstein. Can we read more about this at transportationnation.org?
I think you might, in fact, be able to read more about this at transportationnation.org, Brian.
And maybe even
you
Andrea,
can learn the whole history, too, if you so desire.
At WNYC.org
as
well.
I'm sure you could.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Still so much to come today, including former President Jimmy Carter, the New Yorker cartoon editor Bob Mankoff. In his new book, he recalls the Seinfeld New Yorker cartoon episode and much more. We'll even invite your phone calls about the New Yorker cartoon that you have on your fridge or the one that you didn't get and it's irked you ever since. And a lot more. Stay with us.